It is a pleasure to return to White Springs to take part in today's program as a representative of the University of Pittsburgh. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania appreciates deeply what the Commonwealth of Florida has done here in this lovely place to honor our native son. As a citizen of Pennsylvania, I would like to say, simply and sincerely, thank you. We as Americans have the privilege of living in a broad land of varied scenery, of lakes and forests, mountains and plains, sweeping oceans and thrilling skies. We are continental in our size. Our history forms an epic. One of our greatest poets, Walt Whitman, who lived during Stephen Foster's time, sensed the American epic and wrote stirring poetry of it. The music of that epic for the last 100 years was composed, all unknowingly, by Stephen Collins Foster of Pittsburgh. It seems strange, perhaps, that Stephen Foster was the man selected by fate to provide the music for our country's heart and soul. He was a simple man without pretense, whose virtues were homespun rather than heroic. He was not one of the giants in the realm of music like Beethoven. Yet it was he who, through his strange genius, impossible to analyze, caught the spirit of America of the middle 19th century and preserved it for us in music for all time. Through a century of our history, there winds a river of music, always in close touch with the American earth from which we spring. This river is composed of the nostalgic, heart-thrilling songs of Stephen Collins Foster. These songs seem to have been with us always, so much so that we tend to take them for granted, like the sunrise and sunset. Walt Whitman saw our country as a young giant rising from the earth. A part of that earth is composed of the Suwannee River and the old Kentucky home. In 20 years of research in the life and music of Stephen Foster, I have followed the Stephen Foster Trail thousands of miles. I have experienced the magic of Stephen Foster's music in many places under many conditions. My work has taken me from Massachusetts to California, from Michigan to Florida. Forgive me if I speak in the first person. I am speaking not simply as an individual, the curator of the Foster Hall collection, but as an American citizen who takes pride in being an American. As an American, I have been thrilled with the epic of our country, both in its history and its continental hugeness. The romantic South of an older day, discovery of gold in California, the opening of the West, the tragedy of the war between the states, the strong ties of family and friends so important in our American way of life, all these are phases of our history which Stephen's songs bring to our minds, yours and mine. As the curator of the Foster Hall collection, as well as an American, I have been proud to hear the strains of Stephen's songs throughout our land, both as spontaneous singing in home and around campfire, as well as in formal programs. Etched permanently in my memory are certain experiences connected with the Foster melodies. May I describe a few of them? Hearing the clear voice of a girl singing with tender feeling, Jeannie with the light brown hair, in a garden at Foster Hall in Indianapolis, while the gentle spring breeze filled the air with floating apple blossoms. Attending a convention of German-American singing societies in a civic auditorium at St. Louis, with the massed choruses singing, "Come Where My Love Lies Dreaming." Participating in a Stephen Foster program at Athens, Pennsylvania, where the young Stephen attended school a century ago and wrote his first composition. Included in the program was a quartet of flutes playing that composition, the Tioga Waltz. The strains were carried across the smoothly flowing Susquehanna River and to the beautiful hills beyond, which inspired the waltz. Seeing the bronze statue of Stephen Foster on a hillside in Cincinnati one hot July afternoon, as it faced the valley of the Ohio River he loved so well. Hearing the state song of Kentucky, Stephen's immortal My Old Kentucky Home, as it was sung by 5,000 voices at Bardstown, when the Stephen Foster stamp was issued in that little Kentucky town in 1940. Hearing the United States Marine Band playing a medley of Stephen Foster songs under a midsummer moon in the outdoor garden of the Pan American Union at Washington, D.C. Attending the annual Stephen Foster Memorial Day program of the Pittsburgh Public Schools on January 13, and hearing the voices of young children rising, high and clear and enthusiastic, in the strains of their favorite songs, Old Dog Tray, Beautiful Dreamer, and Camptown Races. Seeing a group of Pittsburgh lovers of the Foster melodies, placing a wreath on the composer's grave in cold, snowy weather, while a colored quartet sang Mosses into Cold Ground. Finding the name of Stephen Foster inscribed on the shell of the outdoor auditorium along the Charles River in Boston as one of 50 world composers. Attending the preview of a Stephen Foster motion picture in Hollywood, it was a new and strange experience to hear the Foster melodies floating out of Technicolor, but remember that the movies are also America. Attending the dedication of the bust of Stephen Foster in the Hall of Fame for Great Americans in New York City in 1941. Election to the Hall of Fame is one of the greatest honors an American can receive. Every year, hundreds of citizens write to the Hall of Fame to urge the election of some great man or woman. In the 1940 campaign, the electors were flooded with requests, not only from Americans, but from people in other countries on behalf of Foster. So overwhelming was the sentiment in favor of Stephen that he was the only successful candidate. At the dedication ceremonies, two world-famous Metropolitan stars were proud to raise their voices in musical tribute to Stephen Foster. We all know that gold was discovered in California in 1848. A year later, the 49ers were on their way to California, the land of promise. Those stalwart pioneers adopted as their marching song Stephen Foster's hearty melody, O Susanna, and used it to cheer them on their way, whether they went by covered wagon across the plains and mountains or by ship around Cape Horn. Thoughts of Stephen Foster's songs and their magic healing power came to my mind on two occasions last summer when I saw two regions of California where early pioneer parties encountered tragedy. In the High Sierras, the Donner Party was caught in an early autumn snowfall and was forced to spend the winter in the mountains. Some of that group died of cold and starvation. Hundreds of miles to the south, in the baking heat of Death Valley, another group of pioneers, the Jayhawker Party, fought heat, thirst, hunger, and broken wagons, and many of their party died. Early one morning last summer, shortly after sunrise, I stood on the summit of a cliff almost a mile above the floor of Death Valley. Before me was a scene of grandeur and terror and utter desolation. Thousands of square miles of Death Valley were spread out below me, hemmed in by the rugged peaks of the Panamint Range. There was not a sign of life of any kind visible in that hot, dry expanse. It was as barren, as remote from humanity, as the face of the moon. I tried to think of the ordeal of crossing that waste in the days before automobiles and good roads. I thought of the strength and stamina and courage required for pioneers to leave established homes and move into new country. Then I remembered how important the songs of Stephen Foster were to people like the Donner Party and the Jayhawker Party. Those songs could not provide food or water or shelter. They could not repair broken wagons or heal the sick, but they could provide comfort after the day's toil and the courage to face the next day. All of these experiences have been thrilling to me, and I shall remember them all my life. However, not one of them made more impression than did the dedication of your own magnificent tribute to America's composer last October, when it was my privilege to attend those ceremonies. Never have the strains of old folks at home meant more to me than when I heard them sung on the bank of the Suwannee River itself. As I heard that wonderful song, the river became more than a geographical name to me. It was not simply a river rising in the Okefenokee swamp of southern Georgia, flowing through Florida into the Gulf of Mexico. It became a half-legendary stream which has encircled the earth, flowing through the soul of humanity. It has become the symbol of all mankind's vague, lost, wordless dreams, of joys that have vanished, of unattainable longings, of homesickness and time sickness. No doubt there are many of you here who have had similar experiences associated with Stephen Foster's songs. Some of them may have affected your lives in ways large or small. A good many poets have written of the effect of rivers on the human soul. We think of Alfred Lord Tennyson's poem in which he says, "For men may come and men may go, but I go on forever." Another poet writes, "Every river has its influence over the people who pass their lives within sight of its waters." The late novelist F. Scott Fitzgerald was moved to say, in the closing lines of The Great Gatsby, "So we beat on, ships against the current, ceaselessly borne back into the past." And so life seems like a river. So Stephen Foster's music seems like a river, a Suwannee River with the power to carry us as people back to our youth, to carry us as a nation back to the 19th century sources of our traditions and heritage. Spiritual experiences based on music leave us not quite the same people we were before the experiences. The soul of the listener expands. He is inspired and uplifted. He is in touch with the infinite. He must eventually return to the world of everyday living, but he will have gained something which cannot be lost. Mr. Josiah Kirby Lilly of Indianapolis, the founder of the Foster Hall Collection, to whose memory the Fosteriana in this museum is dedicated, heard the Foster melody sung when he was a small boy in a trundle bed in his grandparents' home in Greencastle, Indiana. This experience meant so much to him that in his later years, after retiring from business, he devoted the rest of his life to collecting the Foster songs and sharing his work with the people of America. Some years ago, when Mr. Lilly was on a trip to Russia, he heard old folks at home sung in Moscow, in the very shadow of the Kremlin. Stephen Foster would be surprised, no doubt, to learn that his song about our Suwannee River could be used to bore from within in the very heart of communism. During the State Department's recent Voice of America broadcast to Germany, "O Susanna" was used as the introductory theme, an appropriate song indeed. Stephen's simple, sincere melodies have outgrown the small environment of home, that American institution which he loved so well. Their scope has enlarged to take in all America. There is no one section of our country which need have a narrow, selfish interest in him, although all sections may join in doing him honor. He is not a Pennsylvanian through the mere accident of birth. He spent happy years in Cincinnati, but he was not an Ohioan. He wrote the state songs of Florida and Kentucky, but he is neither a Floridian nor a Kentuckian. Although he is an American, we can share him with the world. His music leaps the boundaries of space and time. Like Robert Burns of Scotland and Franz Schubert of Austria, he belongs to all mankind. Our country now realizes its debt to Stephen Foster, and today there are a good many memorials and tributes to the composer throughout the nation. These memorials vary greatly in size, form, and use. There are scores of organizations, chiefly music clubs, which bear his name. The Stephen Foster Music Club of White Springs is a good example of such a club. Five bridges over the Suwannee River in northern Florida, one here in White Springs, bear his name. A granite monument is located at Fargo, Georgia, where the Suwannee emerges from the Okefenokee Swamp. There is a Stephen Foster stone in the Walk of Fame at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. A number of buildings, an auditorium, several schools, two hotels, a community center, a restaurant, and a music hall are named for him. There are many Foster statues, plaques, and busts. New Jersey has a Stephen Foster bandstand and a Stephen Foster garden. A Foster half dollar and a Foster stamp have been issued by the United States. There are a Stephen Foster carillon and stained glass window in Pennsylvania, while Kentucky has a Stephen Foster street and a Stephen Foster highway. There are two Stephen Foster radio stations. A Stephen Foster oak grows in New York City's Central Park, and several varieties of flowers are named for him. A number of commercial products, including a watch, a set of furniture, and a set of plates, were issued in his honor. The Stephen Collins Foster, a Liberty ship which saw service in World War II, is now part of the Mothball Fleet in San Francisco, while a river steamer with the same name plies the Mississippi and other inland waters. There is even a Pullman car bearing the Foster name. It runs on the Louisville and Nashville Railroad between Cincinnati, Ohio, and Nashville, Tennessee. A syndicated editorial about this Pullman car appeared in a number of newspapers in 1938. For many years, people have wondered where the Pullman people get all the crazy names used on their sleeping cars, but no one seems to have done anything about it until recently. Now, however, the L&N Railroad is substituting the names of famous Southerners for some of the queer names formerly used. The heretofore called ampersand, which means simply the character and, becomes Stephen Collins Foster. I know an old soldier now living in the United States Soldiers' Home in Washington, D.C., a veteran of the Spanish-American War and the Philippine Insurrection, who is one of the most ardent admirers of Stephen Foster I have ever known. His love for the Foster music is so great that out of his small pension he has contributed, over the course of 10 years, almost $5,000 to be used for the establishment of an appropriate memorial to Stephen Foster in the national capital. Yet so modest is this old soldier, and so insistent that Stephen Foster, and not he, is the man to be honored, that he wishes his memorial to bear the inscription presented by the American people. He does not wish it to bear any references to himself, nor does he desire any personal publicity. He wishes you and me, as American citizens, to get the credit for his gift. The University of Pittsburgh feels a close kinship with the White Springs Memorial and wishes to be of assistance in its growth and research. In the near future, a gift will come to your Foster Commission from the university, a small statue of Stephen Foster to be placed in the museum. I regret that work on the statue could not have been completed in time for presentation to have taken place today. In closing, let me pay tribute to the Suwannee River, so close to the hearts of all of us. As a boy, I often sang of that river with my family, and hoped that some day I might see it. It is a privilege to stand on the bank of that river in this lovely place, and to know that 1,000 years hence the river will still run, and perhaps will inspire poets, artists, and musicians to create great works. The poet John Dyer has sensed the cosmic meaning in the endless flow of the rivers of this world. And see the rivers, how they run through wood and mead in shade and sun, sometimes swift, sometimes slow, wave succeeding wave they go, a various journey to the deep, like human life to endless sleep.